This is Studio 360. I'm Kurt Anderson. Nicholson Baker is a major American literary figure. He's written nonfiction books about World War II, poetry, the fate of newspapers. But as a novelist, Baker has another side. Back in the 90s, he published two racy R-rated works of fiction. Now he's returning in a big way to the raunch with his new novel, House of Holes. This is definitely not just R, I'd say NC-17 for sure. The most relentlessly, explicitly sexual novel I've ever read. And maybe the dirtiest ever by a serious author. Heads up, we'll keep this conversation clean, clean-ish anyhow, but make no mistake, this is strictly for adults. House of Holes is a series of fantastical sex scenes that all take place in a kind of theme park called the House of Holes. Baker says that his main inspiration for the book wasn't porn, but a famous Renaissance painting.
What I was really thinking of was Hieronymus Bosch's Garden of Earthly Delights, where everybody is, you know, they're contorted, they're strange, a lot of eggs. And it's so hot and startling and so kind of entirely out of a man's imagination.
Yeah.
And you feel that, you know, just look, if Hieronymus Bosch could do it all those centuries ago with no kind of, why can't we just kind of open up our brains and let it go, you know? And that's what I tried to do, is just to say, where do I want to go today, you know?
Yeah.
There is a cartoonish quality to
yes.
this because
yes.
the House of Holes is a place where impermissible things happen and you are sucked into the House of Holes almost without your control because
right.
you're sort of chosen. You're chosen because you're good looking or you're, I don't know, funny or something, but you're sucked down a straw or you climb into a dryer and yes, the back.
Circular portals that you didn't know were portals until you were sucked into them.
Yes. And once you're there, then you meet this woman named Lila who kind of figures out what you should do. And she's and she's got enormous breasts.
As much as I often enjoyed this book, I couldn't keep track of the characters. So I didn't feel as though I was following a hero. And I'm not sure I made out a plot. Was that an effort to reflect the nature of plotless, characterless porn?
Well, you know, the plot of a sex scene is actually very straightforward. And there are lots of plots. It's just that they're plotlets. The plot is
right.
boy meets girl or girl meets boy, and they flirt a little bit, and they take off some clothes, and maybe something happens, and it's, you know, and they're in the grown room or they climb up on a mountain and they, you know, do some wild things while watching some zebras. Whatever it is, it's always going in a certain direction. Originally, I tried to write the book with fewer characters. But honestly, when you are reading a sex book, you want a lot of people. You don't want the same person taking his or her clothes off over and over again. I found that is a terrible mistake if you're in the literary pornography business.
Although almost entirely heterosexual people.
Well, you know, that's a point. I mean, you know, I ask a lot of myself. I want to push the envelope or whatever you want to say. But I have to do – when I'm writing a sex scene, it has to be something that in some way excites me. You know, that if it's about a woman, I want to think, whoa, that's an interesting thing to be thinking about her, thinking about that. So – and I'm a heterosexual guy and I can't help it. So
– Really? So you're comfortable imagining a woman's point of view but not a gay person – not gay person's point of view.
Yeah, because a woman – well, look, if you imagine a woman's point of view – if you're a guy, you're a heterosexual guy, what you think is it exciting that I get to think about what she's thinking about? That is, in fact, the most exciting privilege for a novelist is to dream that up.
Did you do anything beyond doing what a fiction writer does and imagining to get into women's heads and trying to figure out their sexual fantasies?
Well, you know, my wife is long-suffering about this, but I always want to know what she thinks about things. And I do ask her a lot of questions, and she says, look, that's for private. She doesn't want to be put into a novel. She's already been put into two novels in various forms. But did I do research? Of course. I mean, I read up on things. I looked on the internet.
what is your – other than having her specific notes, what did your wife think of this book?
She thought it was funny, and she liked it. And I was hugely relieved because there are some nervous-making scenes. I mean, she was a little bit troubled by the voluntary head detachment where the guy, Ned, you know, he's not – he's good-looking. His body's good-looking, but his face doesn't have the puffy-looked look that – that women like, says Lila. And so to pay his debts, he has to undergo a voluntary head detachment. And then there's a scene in which this body, Ned body, has a kind of strange bodily sex with this woman who just wants a kind of brainless time, you know.
Right.
And she was troubled by that. But then I rewrote it a little bit. And I think this book maybe, actually I'm hoping, that this book appeals more to maybe to women readers than male readers.
So could you read from that slightly rewritten wife-approved chapter for us? And before you do, I want to remind listeners that this is fiction intended for adults.
Okay, this one is called Ned Undergoes a Voluntary Head Detachment. Ned the golfer had incurred terrible debts at the House of Holes, and he was called into the main office. "Let's see your body, please," said Lila. Ned removed his shirt and pants. "Very nice," she said. "And the underpants, please." He stepped out of them with a smile, his jig swaying. She looked at him for a long time, tapping a pen on the arm of her chair. "Your body is adorable," she said. "My face is not so good, though," he said. "Is that what you mean?" "It's a perfectly nice face," she said. "You mean well, you're a nice man, but you don't have that smoldering, puffy-lipped look that a lot of women like." "I know. So what on earth do I do?" he said. "I would say that for you, with that body, the fastest way for you to pay off your debts is with the voluntary head detachment." "What's that?" he said. "I'd like to try it." "Think about it carefully," said Lila. "Your head will be removed and put on a wheeled pedestal. Kathy will roll you around and change your plasma bags and be sure that your electricals are all shipshape." "And my body?" he said. "Your body will go into one of the 6 headless rooms." "Okay, and what happens in there?" "Your body and a woman will get to know each other." "How? My body won't have a head," he said. "No, it won't. There are women who don't want you to have a head." "Oh, I see. Okay," he said. "And your body will have a simple form of consciousness." "How?" "We put a cap on the top of your spinal cord and redirect your nervous system. Your body will be able to think in a very limited way with your spine, penis, and balls. Your ass will serve as a neuronal proxy as well." "I see," he said. "Makes sense. Well, let's do it."
That's Nicholson Baker reading from his new novel, House of Holes, describing a head removal procedure that I'm sure many women especially might regard as already in effect, the way that men operate perhaps in sexual encounters.
Yes, yes. The voluntary head removal's already happened.
Exactly. In the New York Times a couple of years ago, probably while you were in the middle of writing this book or starting this book, the writer Katie Royfe wrote this long essay that got a lot of attention about how big-name, middle-aged male novelists of the present day had sort of abdicated writing about sex, unlike the Mailers and Roths and Updikes of the previous generation. In any way, were you consciously reacting to that idea? Like, oh, not enough sex? I'll show you.
Well, I wish I could say I didn't know that the piece was out. I mean, I felt that I had really felt that I had done my thing with that. But then when I delivered the manuscript and somebody showed me that Katie Royfe thing, I thought, oh, well, thank goodness. And I do think, I mean, I don't know. I think every novelist has the option of having as little or as much sex and everything else, cars and love and airplane flights or whatever it is that you want to put in your book, that's what you
sure
want to do. So I feel there's plenty of sex in book. But when I write a sex book, I really like it to be wall to wall. I mean, that's my problem is when I write a book that's about libraries or about the beginnings of World War II, obviously
right,
there's
right
not going to be. I like a lot of different things in life, but if I'm going to write a sex book, I feel I want, what I would want as a reader is to really have it all the time.
But what sexy literature, other than, I presume, John Updike at his sexiest, do you enjoy reading? Henry Miller? Who are your favorites?
I haven't read Henry Miller. I'm saving that.
Really dirty, by the way. I read it for the first time recently. Just incredibly dirty. Not as dirty as this book, but really dirty.
Oh, you're so nice to say it's not as dirty as this book.
I'm sure in 1940, you know, we had to adjust. It was dirtier. But
adjusted for inflation.
Exactly. Objectively speaking, it's not as dirty as this book.
I went to Planet Fitness a lot while I was writing this book, and I listened to Fanny Hill. Mm-hmm. On audio, and I thought that was absolutely brilliant.
The 18th century Henry Fielding novel, Fanny Hill. Yes,
it's a Henry Fielding wannabe, or maybe even better than Henry Fielding. I think lots of really affectionate, funny descriptions, and they're dirty, but they're arousing. They're kind of tender. But anyway, I listened to it while I was doing the machines, and I learned a lot from it. So there was that. I also listened to some women's romance novels. There's one called Dirty, I think, by Megan Hart. And I'd be on these machines and listening to these kind of breathy women narrators reading these dirty sex scenes. And it was great, actually. It was fun. And I thought, well, this is the business I want to be in somehow. But I can't write dirty women's romance novels, but I can do something. I can get close to it. I can try to be... you know, be in the parade.
You can write postmodern simulacra of dirty women's sex novels, I guess.
Yes, and that's what I was trying to do.
Actually, I think more shocking to me than any of the extremely nonstop dirty language on the 270 pages of this book was the dirty language in the press release from your publisher, from a major publisher, Simon & Schuster, all four-letter and other dirty words. That I found weirdly more shocking than anything in the book. And I'm wondering, they obviously are embracing it and going whole hog. How did they react when you turned it in?
I agree with you. I was very shocked. I don't know. Simon & Schuster is a big name publisher. I don't know what they're doing using dirty words in their promotional material. I find it very, but you know, that's what's exciting. Yeah. And you can get something to happen in the world that is a little bit forbidden. We need the walls and the barriers so that we can high jump or pivot or Fosbury flop ourselves over them.
Yeah. Yeah. Nick Baker, thank you very much. This was a pleasure.
Oh, Kurt, thank you. It was a joy to talk to you.
Nicholson Baker's new novel, House of Holes, A Book of Raunch, is out in early August. I'm bringing sexy back.